Do you like surprises? I was just asked that myself. I do like surprises, and we're switching it up on this episode, season 3, episode 188 of YDT. It's you, it's me. I'm doing all of it backwards, see? This is a show which pulls back the curtain and takes down the walls brick by brick to expose the true hearts of those who are caring for those you love most. And the power of social media, the power of what this has all been able to afford as far as the virality of TikTok and everywhere that you now have found me because of, consequently, that one video. It's amazing how man plans and God smiles. And it's also amazing that you can have worlds separate you, but yet you're still so close. And I am grateful to welcome and introduce a dear friend. And we are going to jump into that in just a moment. But first, always updates. Number 21 at Billboard, still holding tight, yet spent 26 weeks, I believe. Yeah, that's amazing. Last time's 21 at Billboard, just celebrated 200,000 streams on Spotify. So please stream it. It's all going to be in the show notes. Share it with a friend, download it, call your radio stations. Of course, Greenback Boogie is at radio as well. If you live in Green Bay, Wisconsin, or if you live in Denver, Colorado, or if you live in California, anywhere, text your station, call your station, show up. Don't show up to your station. That'd be very dangerous and you might get arrested, but let them know you want to hear last time. You want to hear Greenback Boogie. And thank you for being a part of what it is that we are doing here. And I continue to show up and I promise to do so. And I'm thankful for you. Without further ado, I had the privilege of connecting with a beautiful human being. It was right at 200,000 followers on TikTok at Nathan Morris Music. If you have TikTok, I was scrolling through For You, my For You page, and I remember vividly watching, and her bit is, and we'll talk about it, but her bit is taking songs of old, songs that we all know, and making it their sound, and they have this ability. And I was hooked, and I actually sent a message immediately and was like, let's be friends, because we're going to be friends. And we connected and the stars aligned, and the rest is kind of history. So a Billboard charting artist, a charting successful producer, an entrepreneur, and now I believe the youngest female record label owner in all of Canada, my friend, Kayla Diamond. So you were in Toronto for...
I was, and I'm actually going back again tomorrow. So I'm like, I'm there like so often. And so, yeah, it's literally like this month I'm like living there half the time.
How is that for like your marriage and your daughter? Is that tough, or is it something that you all both, I mean, is it easy, or how does that work with you all?
It's honestly we kind of narrowed it down to like a system. So I have really, really great in-laws. I think you met my mother-in-law when you were at my
house. Your mother and father, very sweet. Yes.
Yeah. They're like super amazing. And like, I'm super blessed to have them. So whenever I go, like Talia just like brings the baby, sleeps at their house. But Talia also is used to like going back and forth to different cities because she's a choreographer. So she's like, and especially like right now in March, it's super competition season. So we were just all in Toronto. Actually, this past week, I brought my daughter, I was about to call her my niece because I sometimes feel like I'm not old enough to have a kid.
You'll feel that way until you're like 50, I think.
Yeah, literally. But so we all went to Toronto and we stayed at my family's house. It was really nice because Gaia got to see my side of the family and I got to work. And then we all came home Sunday morning, and then I'm back again tomorrow.
Do you feel that weight or I don't know, I picture a cloud, but this is also the old me in my previous relationship, marriage for forever. It was this, I can't create. If I'm creating, I'm doing something wrong. I'm not back by curfew. That's what it really felt like. There was no support. I always felt rushed if I was doing something. Do you ever have, obviously that's pretty extreme, but do you have a sense of being pulled home or not really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, and it's funny that you say this because I feel like creatives, like people who are not creative, don't realize what that is. They're just like, yeah, whatever, just create from 9 to 5 and then afterward just go home, you know, like it's so easy. But you're like putting a time limit on creation, which affects the quality of it. But thankfully, I'm married to somebody who like is also a creative, just like not in music. Right. So like I appreciate what she does. She appreciates what I do. And she's like super respectful. So, you know, I've now had to sort of move around my schedule just so that I can like be there for my daughter and take care of her and stuff. So like my schedule now consists of like I wake up at like 6 with my baby, feed her breakfast, get her changed, take her to school at like 7:30, come home.
Oh, yeah. She's how old is she now?
She's one a little bit. Oh, 1.5.
Like she's a real human now.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. She's a pom pom on her head.
Yeah, she's a real human. She actually, I mean, she's walking, right?
Walking. She has her new words are like why? Hi and why.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you get it. I mean, like you have a disposition about you that I've always appreciated, and that was kind of how we got connected in the first place. Really, is just this: you're pretty even keel for the most part. I don't see.
I'm thankful that I appear
rocked
that way.
You don't. I don't ever recall a time where I feel you're very disciplined with the schedule, your calendar, when things pivot, and you're very responsive and saying, "Hey, can we move this?" or "Hey, this opened up." That's a good quality to have. Have you always been that way, like very organized?
I think, yeah. I mean, for sure, organized. My biggest my biggest fear for me is that someone thinks that I'm disrespectful of their time. Because for me, my biggest pet peeve is when someone doesn't respond to a message. It's super easy. If I, who has a kid and like, you know, it's not you. You're great.
I owe you an apology. No, I mean, you always meet deadlines too, by the way. So that's
I always
that's a
try.
Huge,
you know, it's like a respect thing for people.
Yeah.
Because I know what it's like to be an artist also when I'm waiting for stems and I'm like, oh my God, did he get my message? I don't want to be a bother. Like, you know, so I can put myself in the shoes of an artist, you know?
You can bust my balls all day long. I totally. So that's something you're like, you send it, it's proactive as hell. And then I don't see it. And then you're like, hey, just following up. I'm like, shit. Or I listen and I don't respond like an idiot, which is not actually like me, but I think I get actually just lost in it because of the excitement of receiving something that we've worked on. So anyway, I do owe you an apology because time is unreplenishable. And obviously you've gone out of your way.
You're not even one of those people I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people who like, you know, who will look at your message and be like, I'll respond to this in 3 hours so that I look cool. Like I'm not interested in that.
Yeah,
I have zero patience for that. Like you've lost the job then, you know?
Yeah. You grew up in where? Where'd you grow up?
Toronto, like the city.
You grew up in Toronto. You live in?
Montreal.
Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. So you all moved there or Talia's family's from Montreal?
Oh yeah. Talia is from Montreal. I had only ever been to Montreal once before I met Talia. So I had no intention of like, I never thought I would live anywhere else in the world other than Toronto, like ever. Cause Toronto is just where it's at, you know? I also didn't realize how close Montreal was. I always thought it was because it's French Canada, people from Ontario are super snobby about it. And they're like, so far away. It's a different country, you know?
But yeah, because whenever we were there, don't they greet us in like 3 languages
at
like a restaurant? It's like French, English, and Spanish. Is that right?
No Spanish. It's just French and English. Because in America, it would be English and Spanish. And here, our second language is French. So there's a lot of that going on.
And are you fluent in French?
I wish I was.
But no? Like you can kind of fake it? Like you can.
Oh, yeah. I could get by really well. Like really well. You wouldn't even know. But they would know.
Did you? Okay, so I want to make sure that I say we met, of course, because of the beauty of social media and and TikTok. And I remember you told me whenever we were visiting and you took me around to some of your favorite places, which I really appreciate. But tell me again, you went to a private school, right?
I did, yeah. All girls, Orthodox Jewish day school for like 12 years. Skirts to the floor, only kosher food, not really privy to the outside world.
So you were like living a real life, and I mean this with the utmost respect, but like Truman Show.
Yeah, essentially.
Right? Like it was just this bubble that you lived in.
Totally, yeah. Right? And I still have friends who are like in it, you know? Like they don't, one of the things is like when a woman gets married, like she covers her hair because her hair becomes really holy and it's only for her husband. So, you know, a lot of my friends wear wigs and like really good wigs though. You wouldn't even know. Like they look, they're like, they're hot friends.
and that is okay because it's not their hair.
Yeah, but some communities don't allow that. Like, I think we were walking around Outremont when I took you to Cafe Olympico. And there's a lot of really, really, really Orthodox Jews in that area. And they have like, they're the ones with the like, the hats and stuff. And they don't wear wigs because they think it's too sexy. And it's like too inappropriate. But like the community I come from, you know, my friends are wearing wigs right now. Like they're on their like eighth kid. You know, their oldest is 13 and they're 30.
And they're your age, right? It's like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Just popping out babies. Did you know that I learned this through doing all of those weird TikTok series videos, but there was a business owner in Canada and he left. He was a big jokester and he was giving, he owned a brewery. I always say that word really bad. I can't say it well. But he, to all of these Protestant ministers, upon his death, he gave his vacation home to three friends that he knew hated each other. And then another thing he did was the stork. Over the next decade, he said, the remainder of my wealth, whoever has the most children in 10 years. And was that in Toronto?
I have. This is the first time hearing of it, but this person's genius.
Yeah. So over the course of a decade, whoever has the most children will get the remainder of my wealth. And two women had 9 children in 10 years. I think it was, I don't know, but wow. I'll have to search where that is. But that was in our nice little neighboring country of Canada there.
I wish it was one of my friends.
That'd be amazing because it sounds to me like they were on track or would have been on track to win that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So when you grew up in this bubble, do you see it as a beautiful thing overall? I mean, not just beautiful moments, but do you feel like it was something that was very important to shaping you?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like it was because even now when I step back into it, when I like visit my parents and stuff, like I will step back into it. Like literally Saturday night, I just went to my, you know, one of my friends from high school who is really Orthodox, has 3 kids, lives in my parents' area, wears a wig, skirt to the floor. Like when I like walk into that space, I'm entirely just like myself. You know, it's like a childhood friends, right? You're yourself around your childhood friends. They know you as this, like, they left you as this, as the high school kid, right? We haven't seen each other really like grown together. We just like parted ways after high school. But when we see each other, we're kids again. And so like that community knows the most authentic version of myself. Not that I would ever like, you know, put on a fake persona or whatever, but
you have to protect versions of you to a degree.
Yeah. That's a version of me that nobody I work with knows for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. Meeting your parents and learning about a lot of even the traditions. But I want to talk about after high school, but during high school, you're like, I'm going to be a musician. This is what I'm gonna do forever. Or when was that?
Never. Honestly, when I look back, I'm like, hey, it was so apparent that this was like the path that I should have taken. But, you know, growing up in that community, it's like, first of all, it's illegal for women to sing in public. Like,
is it really?
Yeah. I mean, no, I say illegal, like it's like, you're going to get jailed for it. It's just, it's a slap
very
on the
frowned
wrist.
Upon.
You know, it's very frowned upon. Wow. There's a rule in our section of rules of the Torah that says a woman can't sing in public because it might turn a man on, which might lead to sex before marriage, right? So a woman's voice in public is deemed like pretty sexy. So, but I was always like within my own, like all girls high school, we were allowed to have choirs and sing and, you know, but no men could be in the room when that was happening. So they always made me head of choir. Like, and I was always in choir. I was always the one, I was wickedly, honestly, very talented at piano. Like, in the sense of I never practiced, but it was a mad gift from God that, you know, you say a song, I take a listen to it, and I can easily play it, replicate it. So
ever
I was,
since you were little, like ever since ever you can since remember, was, that's what you've been able to do? Wow.
Yeah. Can't read score for shit, though. Oh, can I swear on this?
Yeah, you can cuss all you want. I love it. I love the word fucking stuff. But I was asked this the other night on one of my lives. They're like, hey, so what's it like being a writer, and they were saying like composer, and I said the same thing. I hear something in my head. I can't do this, but I can hum and say, oh, go do do do, you know that. But that's mm-hmm. amazing that you are. Yeah, you do that. That's like your thing. You just, and then you do all the harmonies and the stacks and stuff. So I pictured being like me. I went to a private Catholic school,
oh,
which
wow.
is awesome.
What
I'm Roman
like?
Catholic. Yeah, it's just like two totally different worlds. Mm-hmm. But in a sense, there's a lot of parallels. But I just picture the me walking into like an all-girls school singing in choir singing. I'd be like, oh, like what's an Orthodox Jewish young boy, prepubescent, walking into a room of women, young tweens, whatever. What would that be like for someone that's very devout?
A massive scandal. Like, a massive scandal. Like, we would get,
oh,
like,
oh, my gosh.
Oh, we would
Mom,
have
I became
assembly.
A man. No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't say anything. They probably would take that to their grave, but pass that. I don't know. That's amazing.
We've had assemblies in my, honestly, we've had a lot of, my school was really fun. Like, my high school experience was so fun that it could never be replicated ever again. Like, I had a group of like five core best friends, and we like, I just did such stupid shit. Like, for example, like I used to play pranks all the time. And
that's something I didn't know about you.
Oh,
so
I'm
you're
a
like
huge,
a joke. Like, you're a prankster.
Huge jokester. Like, huge.
Just one thing you can't do in our friendship. And Marilyn finally has learned this, but you can't scare me. If you scare me, I create cuss words, and there's like there's probably a 10-minute time frame where I hate someone.
Like a jump like, scare?
Any scare. I mean, like, I'm a big sissy. I really am. I don't watch scary movies. I never have. Anyway, so you are a big jokester and prankster. That's what you do.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Don't scare me.
Big
but tell
joker.
Tell me what the kind of stuff you would do.
So, like, I used to always come up with the ideas of what we're going to do. Like, One time I bought this fart machine. It's going to sound so dumb, but like, I think farts are hilarious. And my wife says
yeah,
it's because
they're God's gift.
Yeah. Oh my God. They're God's version of comedy. Like my wife says it's because I grew up religious that I think farts are funny. Cause it's like an innocent sense of humor. But I got this fart machine. It was like this big. Okay. And then it came with a remote control. And so you could put this anywhere. Right. And this was like the sound box and then the remote control. So what I did was right before class, one day I like went into the classroom and it was like those tiles that you could poke, right? Those like office tiles. So yes. I took the machine and I put it right on top of where I knew the nerdiest girl in my class was going to sit. Like, she was a very...
She
like,
hates you so much.
Pick
right
me
now.
Girl, you know? and so I sat in the back of the classroom and I was just like... You know, clicking that every time. It was a silent moment. And the rabbi who was teaching the class, he actually just died last week, which is horrible. But he was a really funny guy. And he turned bright red because he was also, you know, there's like a level of modesty that the rabbis have to, you know, be in front of a classroom of girls, too. So he felt so awkward.
I bet.
It was
I mean,
great.
I can't imagine. So how is he able to be, obviously because being a rabbi, I would presume, where he's able to be in a room with all women or young women? Is that how that works? Got it.
Yeah, and a woman's allowed to teach a class of men. It's totally fine.
Yeah. I remember my eighth grade. I've only had one crush on a teacher, and it was eighth grade math class. I'm terrible at math, by the way. Are you good at math?
Mm-mm.
Got it. It's usually people who are artistic, creative, that are terrible at math.
Yeah.
I'm so bad. I struggled for a C, but Miss Sturmer is her name. And the cool thing about it is when Miss Sturmer was out sick, she would have her sister be the substitute teacher.
Okay.
And she was like Miss Sturmer Jr.
Oh, wow. So anyway, younger, hotter version?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I wonder what ever came of that. But eighth grade, you know, did you ever grow up having like a crush on a teacher or no?
Yes. Actually, yeah. It only hit me years later. But when I was in grade five, we had a geography teacher, and her name was Miss Pham. Like
Pham?
Yeah, Miss. I think she was Vietnamese, like Pham. And yeah. I remember her just being so hot that like I could not think. I don't even remember the sound of her voice because I was just like, you're the prettiest person I've ever seen.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You don't have any idea whatever came of her, right?
No, but I feel like she was destined for greater things. Like the way she dressed to class, like she was like in office attire. Like I feel like she's a lawyer now, probably.
That's amazing. Obviously, she's someone that just was captivating, right?
Totally.
Because you're not the type of person, knowing you, hanging out with you, talking to you, you're not just going to be drawn to anybody, even a schoolgirl crush. But that's interesting. That's very, very interesting. So you have your core group of friends. You fart a lot in class. The rabbi. Well, is graduation pretty similar? I mean, is it? These are very naive, ignorant questions, but I love to learn.
Question.
Thanks for not making fun of me. So you graduate high school. Is it like cap and gown or no?
It is. It's cap and gown. It's all parents for some reason. So my dad was heavily involved in the making of the school that I went to because he has a really interesting job, which is he essentially is a consultant for private schools, and he like owned a couple private schools growing up. And so, you know, the Jewish community kind of turned to him to be like, hey, can you put a school together for us? And he like did the hiring and stuff. And then he sent me like 10 years later. So he was like the class dad, and he kept it a massive secret, but I didn't know that he was going to be the host of my graduation.
Wow.
So
it was it was special, wasn't it?
It was really special. And also it was like super embarrassing. My dad's like super embarrassing. So he walked in and everybody like, it's a thing of respect. Like when somebody older walks into the room, everybody in the room stands up. It's like it's a really nice thing when somebody's like,
it's a gentleman thing. It's a gentleman thing for us.
Yes. But yes. In Kentucky.
Okay. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of similarities like in just like etiquette and stuff. Like the Torah is really kind of obsessed with etiquette and just like respecting people and making sure that like everybody's sensitive to everybody's feelings. And so everybody stands up, and my dad is like this 5'4" guy, and he walks into like a sea of like everybody's in black, right? Like black and white, because it's like a very Orthodox Jewish school. My dad walks in, he was wearing seersucker. Okay. He was in a seersucker suit. And he walks in, he's this 5'4" guy, and he was just revealed, right, as like the secret host of the night. And he walks in, and we're all sitting there in like three rows, like a bunch of girls. He goes, I'd like to welcome all the parents here tonight to season 5 of The Bachelor. And he just like goes like this to everybody, and we're all sitting in three rows.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
He's good. Like he is very he's very welcoming, and when I met him, you could tell that he's present.
Yeah,
like he didn't have distractions, and I mean, and his granddaughter is you know, around, but whenever we were able to have a conversation, he's focused on our conversation. And I admire that in people, because when you're not, we have distractions in life. I mean, it's natural. And to be able to be, I mean, not distracted by your beautiful grandchild and just have a conversation with a, you know, a stranger from Kentucky means a lot. So I recognize that about your dad pretty quickly, which is pretty awesome. Now, is it your dad or is it your, who sings? Does somebody sing?
My mom kind of sings.
Did somebody do music? Did your mom do music or?
She used to be a teacher and she like taught through music a lot. Like everything she taught, she made a song about.
I feel like I talked to her about that maybe, but.
It's possible.
I thought that she was like a music teacher or something, but. At graduation, he obviously was hosting season 5 of The Bachelor. and then, of course, Orthodox Jewish, you all don't date, or do you?
So we're Is not supposed to.
Got it.
But like I Got definitely it. Had a boyfriend in high school, and no, we all had boyfriends
How does
in
that,
high school.
So, okay, so if you want to go on a date with someone, and obviously you're not supposed to, mm-hmm. what do you say? I'm just going to hang out with my friend.
You like you like, don't go on real dates. You go on like secret shady dates where like you like you like drive in like your parents' van and you're like go all the way to the boys' school and you wait outside like around the corner and then they open the door and they like jump in the van.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they jump That's in awesome. The van and then you like talk or like you hook up, you know.
Yeah. You keep your heads down if you drive off somewhere.
Oh,
and you wait till the coast is clear.
Heads
kind of
down
thing.
For sure. I've done.
You're probably a few years younger than me. But I remember I was a junior in high school, and it wasn't until then until I got you remember those Nokia, the first like brick phones?
Oh yeah.
Things that it was run over by a car, and it still worked.
Oh yeah.
But before that, we didn't have any means to communicate. We just met up. Did y'all pass notes in class too or no?
We were more of like a BBM. I think I'm a generation under.
You're a little bit behind. Yeah.
Yeah. We were all about the BBM. Like if you had like a
That's
PIN
amazing.
Number. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you were one of those people then. That's funny.
Oh yeah.
May they rest. Yeah. That's awesome. So you graduate high school and you're like, I'm going to college. I'm going. What do you do after that?
Oh, yeah. So everybody in my grade did a year in Israel. So right after high school, we started our like it's sort of like a pre-university where you could get credits for university and everything. But you live for the year in Israel and you just like study the Torah and you just immerse yourself in our culture. And some people choose to stay. Some people have never left. And it's been like 12, 13 years. Wow. I did 1 year, so I lived in Israel for 1 year, and I studied Torah, like, all day, every day, and I lived in a very religious area, and it was a very, looking back on it, was, like, a very stupid school.
I was going to ask, is that something that you felt to be, like, this incredible thing, or were you like, man, I don't want to say wasted time, but...
No, I think it was more of, like, a coming to an adulthood for me versus like actually putting into practice what I was learning, because like I always question things, right? So if somebody's telling me like, okay, well, you know, like the Torah is all about like, okay, these are the laws, this is the way to be, blah 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 blah, right? I'm always about getting to the root of like, okay, who made this, right? Why did they make this?
You're an Orthodox Jew's worst nightmare.
So like,
yeah, like, don't question. Yeah,
don't question. Okay, so like, who translated the Bible? Men. Okay, so were any women consulted in making of women's laws? No. So then, why do I have to follow this shit? Like, you know, and it's very great. Like, a lot of people live in the rule bubble, and they love it because it's a very safe space, especially
safe.
For women. Like, you're taken care of. You know, you don't have to question about finances and like. There is a beautiful thing about that. But for me, I just like, I wanted to know more and stuff. And so that year in Israel was wild. I actually got kicked out in the middle because I ate a pot brownie. My mom to this day will die on her bed and say, I didn't know that there was weed in the brownie, even though I've told her. several times. I just wanted to try weed. So this girl comes up.
I have
up
a similar experience. It was on a mission trip in Bull Savannah, Jamaica.
Wow.
And I was with a bunch of older people. I was a freshman in high school. And one of the teachers of the Catholic school that was from where I'm from, we went over there to do mission work. He provided the weed.
No way.
And then told on us and said that it wasn't his weed. And I'm a freshman in high school. Mr. Brutal Honest tried it one time. I'm like, yeah, I did it. And I get like hexed. So I kind of feel you to a degree.
My mom wouldn't deny that though. Sadistic.
Yes. So messed up.
Isn't it weird when you look back on certain things of your childhood and you're like, no, that's not right.
Absolutely. But see that moment was one of those, but that's why I'd always get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Is because in sixth grade I'm looking at my teacher who hated me. Her name was Mrs. Borries, and she thought I was the worst, but I was bored. And I would question her all the time. I'm like, that's not right. Because I knew, but how dare a sixth grader? Right. So there's this level of respect too. But anyway, yeah, I was the spawn of Satan, I think. So you were talking about like the women adhering to the Torah that is written by men. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And so the Christian faith has run into that a lot, especially the Old Testament versus mm-hmm. New Testament, you know, because the Old Testament has all of these stories or requirements that were of that time. Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense, right? So these laws make sense. It's still illegal in the state of Kentucky. That's not been removed from the law books, as far as I know, that you can't chew gum because people would chew gum in the 1800s, spit it out, and it would get stuck in the horse's teeth.
No way.
So
that's such a cool law.
It is a cool law. Now, is it still in there? I think it is. I don't know. I mean, it's not like I'm sitting here reading like the KRS and stuff, but I guess I apply that. I think about that with even, you know, man who were given the word of God or you know, whichever mm-hmm. faith you practiced. I still think there's a lot of beauty and parallels. But do you have that within the church and religion where they're going back and maybe refining it or revisiting? Or is it something that's just very solid?
No, they're doing a lot of that just because, I mean, they're not doing it at the rate I'd like them to be doing. Like there's certain laws about marriage between a man and a woman where this is actually a point of contempt in a lot of households right now, is that in order to get divorced as a Jewish couple, the man has the final say. So a woman could be tethered to a man for years and years and years and years because a man refuses to give her the paper. And it's entirely in his power as to whether or not he wants to give her the paper. So they're working on it. It's called a get, the paper. The paper's called a get. And so
is this even outside, is this governmental law even, or is it the church law first? Does that make sense?
It's the Torah law. Yeah. So, but it's Torah even, law. Even people who are not observing of it, like who get married in a Jewish way are bound to it. So it's very all encompassing of every kind of Jew, who wow. got married under Jewish law, which is, it's that to me is just beyond. Obviously, a man made this law. Like a woman would have never
Absolutely.
Signed off.
How
on
dare
that.
You? My pride is stroked in the worst way. You will not leave me.
Yeah. And you need to go to Jewish court to do it too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We have our
that
own.
That would be
court.
Like super nerve wracking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have, okay. So the Catholic, growing up Catholic, I don't want to call it a rivalry, but the most closed-minded toward the Roman Catholic would be the Southern Baptist.
Oh, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So the Southern Baptist is, you know, how dare you drink and all of that. And I'm not saying that in a mocking tone. I'm just, that's what we experienced. I'll never forget, my cousin married a Southern Baptist and we went to the wedding. It was Southern Baptist on this side and Catholic on this side. And there was literally like all night long this line.
Was it like a dry wedding?
Oh, yeah.
So that makes it more awkward.
It was horrible. But who is like,
wow.
Who's the, who is the, the what am I trying to say? The villain.
We have a lot of those.
If you all had to compare
within the Jewish community, there's like 20 different kinds of Jews.
Yeah.
So it's literally.
So you have the kosher and then, right? Like those that are that practicing Jewish community?
Yeah. You have like Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, Ultra Orthodox, Hasidic. You have like, you know, modern Orthodox, which is what we are, where we just pick and choose. And we're just like, okay, I don't feel like keeping kosher today because it's not convenient for me. But yeah. I pray every morning. I wake up and I have my set prayers that I do every morning. And before I go to sleep, I do a prayer. My wife does the same prayer. And the first time we did that, I had no idea that she said that prayer before she went to sleep. It was like our first sleepover. And I was like, you do that? She was like, I do. Yeah.
So she's an Orthodox Jew too? Talia came
more than me.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to talk about that, but like you were dating a guy in high school, secretly like jumping into a creepy, you know, clown van type thing. And then your mother and father, you are very traditional. And then Talia and I are getting married. I mean, how does that work in the faith community?
I kind of gave people no choice but to be on the train because it was leaving anyways. And I think I'm kind of like that in life. Just with every decision I make, like I am on a train, it's going this way, you're on or you're off. So that's kind of how I presented it to my parents.
You are the youngest child?
Out of four.
Youngest sibling? Yeah. So is that always been how you are? Like you are just set in who you are. I've noticed that about you. It's pretty awesome. I mean,
I'm sure
you have. We all struggle with maybe insecurity or moments of something, but I've noticed that. So you have this train. You're like, all right, guys, gals, this is my girlfriend. This is my now wife. Either you be a part of our lives or choo-choo kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I came out to my parents when I was 23. And I had introduced them to my ex-girlfriend. They didn't love her, which I don't blame them. But when Talia came around, I was like, on the first date, I looked at her. I was like, we're getting married. So. About a month later, I introduced her to, not even a month later, maybe a week later, I introduced her to my parents. And I was like, this is the one. We know we're getting married. So we're going to enjoy the beginning stages of this relationship.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And your parents, they were very welcoming and receptive, right?
Yeah, to the most
part.
Or
is it hard? It's probably a hard thing. I would think.
Yeah, it's just, and it's not even for them really. It's because of the community that they're in. So it's a community that likes to talk, right? And for me, I'm just so unaffected by people talking. Like, I don't care. People are going to talk regardless of what you're doing. And like, a lot of people I know remain in the closet and they're just weird. And I don't want to be like that.
And they're living this very empty life or version of life.
Yeah, in their parents' basement too. Like, what are you doing? You're 35. Yeah. You're living in your parents' basement? Come on.
It sounds like you're describing a funeral director. It's like living in the parents' basement, stroking a teddy bear. That's amazing. When did you say, like, music? When was it artist? Because you started, of course, as an art... Well, I'm talking... You started as an artist, if you didn't know that. No. When did you start your trajectory as a musician and artist?
So I had no plan on doing this at all. I didn't think this was any kind of career because I think people outside of the music industry, they only see having a successful career as, okay, you're either Beyonce or you're poor. And I think that's really funny to me. I grew up thinking that, right? I was like, I'm never going to be Beyonce. You know, like I knew I was definitely talented. Like I knew, you know, out of my community, I was different, but it wasn't an option. I didn't know anybody in the music business, none of that. So I was actually in law school. I went to law school and the summer between undergrad and law school, I had some time on my hands and I just like, wrote a song for the first time ever. And I put it out on YouTube. And then when I got to law school in August, it was in Windsor, Ontario. And I was living in Windsor, Ontario, which is the probably the shittiest part of Ontario. Sorry, people in Windsor. But
sorry, Windsor. We love you.
My sister-in-law's sister-in-law, Lee Moore, sent me a link to a contest called It's Your Shot, put on by this company called Slate Music. And if you won this competition, it was like a songwriting competition. If you won, I think there was like 1,000 applicants across Canada, excluding Quebec. If you won, you won a record deal. And so I was like, cool, I have nothing to lose. I'm in law school, I'll just submit this thing. But 4 months later, like it's like December, I just finished my last exam. I get a call from Slate Music being like, you won. And I was like, oh, wow.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I did kind of forget about it. And then I was like, oh my God, wow. And then I call my dad, I'm like, is this legit? Can you like look into this? And he's like, it's legit. So I came home on winter break. I had a meeting with the team and they were like, you should leave law school for this. And then I was like, are you serious? And then they were like, well, you could go back to law school and like come back on the weekends. And then I was like, this is too hard. But I was dead set on staying in law school because I was like, that's the responsible thing to do. So I went back to law school after winter break and I was sitting in property class looking at the board and it's like the rule against perpetuities. And I'm like, I have endless studio space at my fingertips and I'm sitting here. So I walk into the dean's office and I was like, I'm leaving. But before that, I walked into a professor.
This is another choo-choo moment. You're like, choo-choo.
Yeah. Like, so like, yeah. So there was this professor named Michelle Richards and she was our legal writing teacher. And I just loved her. Like there was something about her that was just, she's like, she would always talk about, you know, some people are not meant to be lawyers. Some people are blah, blah, blah. You know, like some, like she was very open-minded. She wasn't just law school, law school, law school. Right. So, and I had like a very nice, she was scary as hell because I admired her. So I sat down in her office and I was like, can I talk to you for a second? I was like, I got
any conversation that starts with, can I talk to you for a second is always like a really stressful one.
Yeah. And I sat in her office and I looked at her and I was like, so over the winter break, I got signed. She goes, what? She's like, what do you mean you got signed? I was like, to literally a record label, like, you know, I explained it all to her. And she goes, let me just tell you something. When I was your age, I was 22 at the time. She goes, when I was your age, I was offered, you know, like a ballet thing. She was like, I think about that sometimes. Like, I don't want you to have to like think about that. So go in there and give it your best shot. And then if it doesn't work out, we'll save your spot here. Like, come back to law school. It's okay. So I kind of like,
could have been any better.
Yeah. I kind of got advice. The permission and like everybody in law school was like cheering me on. And I packed up my books and I was like,
people are throwing paper. There's like slow motion. It's amazing.
It was like the end of a movie. And it was like, that's, you know, amazing. It was a regal looking law school too. And I'm walking through like the pews and it was like.
So cool. That's like every American Pie-esque movie ever, the ending. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I packed
up. You got permitted. You were permitted to do it.
I was permitted. And I even called Slate Music and I spoke to, you know, I barely knew them at the time, but I was like, can I talk to Jim Campbell, who was like my A&R at Slate Music at the time? He was going to be my A&R, right? And I said to him on the phone, I was like, Jim, I'm in the lobby at my law school. I want to leave law school and do the thing that you guys offered me. And I was like, am I crazy? He said back to me on the phone, he goes, yes, you are crazy. But don't worry, we'll arrange for you a week of sessions and we'll show you how to write a good fucking song. And I was like, wow. And I'll never forget that conversation I had with him. And then
that's amazing.
I came back and I wrote a bunch of songs. And the summer after, I had that, which was like top 30 on Billboard. And like, it was crazy.
Yep. That's amazing. And then, and you're, what transpired for, was it the pandemic?
Yeah.
Is it the pandemic? It puts, you had all that momentum happening, right? The top 30 record. And were you working on a tour Or yeah. Were you working on, what were you working on that just came to this massive halt?
So I was about to do my first shows in the US, and I was booked to start it off in Texas at South by Southwest. I got in, you know, I had my whole band. At the time, honestly, though, my music was not doing well because, you know, my team just was kind of falling apart and I was losing complete control over it because I was writing the songs, doing a great job at writing the songs with some of the top producers. And none of the songs I wanted to come out were coming out. I was seeing just like decisions being made that I did not okay. You know, I'm the type of person that like I will try something once, and if it doesn't go right, I switch. Right. Because if you keep doing the same thing and it keeps having the knowledge that what you tried failed over and over again, that's actually insanity. Literal definition of crazy. Yeah. And I kept telling my team, I'm like, why do we keep releasing with this distribution company when they keep failing and like not even uploading my songs to TikTok? And at that point, I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this. I can't. I felt really like being an artist was not the life I wanted. I did not want to be, first of all, I didn't want to be an independent artist either. I realized that like, yeah, it's fun when your song's on the radio. It's really fun. It's way more fun to hear a song on the radio that you wrote, that a bigger artist has to deal with promoting. I don't want to deal with any of that. I want to have fun on TikTok. I don't want any pressure on my TikToks. I don't want to have any people calling me, telling me I need a viral moment. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. People don't realize the, like, writing your songs and being signed, it sounds really, really cool. But this team that you're talking about, just going back to that, it's people who believe in you, yes, but they might have their personal challenges, but also the people that they answer to, and then somebody might leave or get fired, or the team just constantly is getting just shaken up. And your stuff is, you find yourself either shelved or they're doing the same damn thing over, thinking something different's going to happen. And you're over here frustrated. And it can be very detrimental for an artist. Now, it can obviously be the polar opposite too, but you experienced a lot of headache, it seems. So you hang your hat, essentially. You're like, I'm done with the artist thing.
I'm totally done. Out of there. Yeah. I got out of there because I was like, if I continue down this road, as this artist who's trying to recreate my number one hit, whatever my top hit that I've had, if I keep trying to strive for that with a team that does not have the same drive, that checks out at 5 p.m. and goes on their, you know, vacation homes, I'm sitting here screaming into a pillow, right? Because nobody cares about your art more than you do, right? But I was like, okay, wait. This will add value to the music industry because I know what it's like to be an artist. I know what it's like to have a team that doesn't care about your shit more than you do. I want to really be behind artists and care about their shit as much as them. Like so then during the pandemic, you know, my tour got canceled. We had just built this home. And so I built a studio and I was like, I'm going to learn Logic Pro. And I've seen it. I've watched a bunch of producers, my producers. I sat behind some of the best producers in Canada and I've watched them work and I've asked the right questions. And so literally over the course of 2 years, every single day from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., I was learning Logic and just running drills. And then I started taking sessions after about a year with smaller artists. And I've just kind of, you know, getting in the flow of taking a session and being comfortable. And then I was like, producing songs for artists. And I was like, I love this. This is the best feeling I've ever had. And I feel so much more fulfilled than I was as an artist, just sitting by the phone, hoping my agent's going to call me.
That's like another playing the piano by ear thing. You know, I can dabble in Logic. I think it's you possess a discipline that obviously the talent, not everybody can have the talent, but you have the discipline that can sit from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and really dive into that. And you've actually done a lot of encouraging. Hey, I learned a lot of this on YouTube, Nathan, check this out. Do a lot of Google search type stuff because yes, the information's out there, but everybody has the ability, capability, but no one, not everyone does it, I guess, is what I'm getting at. So I tip my hat to you in regards to, so you have, you start with like the smaller artist, and what was the moment that, what was your first like big hell yeah as a producer? You know, you're the producer now. I'm going to live this life of just producing, writing and producing. What was your first hell yeah moment?
Wow, nobody's ever asked me that. I think a hell yeah moment. Oh, I've had so many.
Your brain, just go back in time to the first moment that pops in your head as the as being a new producer. You're like, yeah, that's awesome.
I think being able to rap a song like really, really well by the end of the day in a writing camp as a producer, that's a skill. It's like running a drill. And if you can do it.
That is, I've never, okay, I compliment you again, because whenever I flew there and we were doing, we didn't know what the, I didn't. I mean, I knew we were going to hang out and do something, but we wrote that song and recorded that song in one day.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty amazing, because it's not something, and there's also the chemistry aspect too. I mean, like, you have a really good ability to make people feel good, because you're very calm, and you're not, you don't, it's not like this, like me, I feel I'm a lot of like energy and stuff. I'm probably overbearing sometimes, but you just have this way to just like sit in that. And so that's great. But yeah, that's quite the talent to do that. So you have, my gosh, so it's been 2 years full time as a writer producer. And I want to talk about the fact that you just, I mean, it's all over the place. You started your record label.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. And what the hell were you thinking to do that?
I had always, you know, from a younger age, it's so crazy how I might have subtly manifested it. I was like, yeah, one day I'm just going to own a label. Like, for sure, I'm going to start a label. Like, I always said that. And then my lawyer, like in May, was like, just let me, like, just start a label. And I was like, well, what does that entail? Like, I don't want to be sitting at a desk like from 9 to 5. Like, that's a desk job. Like, as a CEO of a label. So I was like, I need partners that are going to allow me to be creative. So he matched me with some incredible partners who are so, their philosophy is, you're good at being creative. We're not going to take that away from you. We're going to handle all the label stuff. You're going to make the final decision at the end of the day, but you're going to be head, essentially, you know, I own the label, but I'm head of A&R, you know, so I get to help artists really pick the song and develop the sound and be the producer for the artist. So it's a way to also, you know, it's a way to push my production out there as well. A lot of the times, like, yes, producers do get paid, which is fantastic. It's actually probably the only job in the industry that gets an upfront fee and master points, which is,
yeah,
you know,
one
of the reasons I became a producer. I was like, this is way more lucrative than being an artist. But,
yeah, artists don't make shit.
Unless you're touring, you know, like,
unless you're touring. That's right. That's right. I mean, and you're paid, you know, months, you know, you've got your streaming, but then it's, what, 3 months delayed, probably, roughly?
Roughly, yeah. So the key is, like, eliminate overhead as much as you can on tour and make it look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you as the head of A&R, you have full creative. You are the owner of the label. And Colossal, right?
Yes, yeah.
Colossal. What made you decide that name? Like, because I've come up with names in businesses, and you're like, was it a tough experience for you, or was it super easy?
You have no idea the names that it was going to be.
What's the most wretched like name that you thought of, and you're like, oh, I can maybe, and then now you're like, that is terrible.
You want to laugh?
Yeah.
MILF Records.
Why?
I was like,
that's amazing.
Can
is
you
it because
imagine?
Are you a new mom at this point? Yeah. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. I said it to Talia, my wife. I was like, wouldn't it be great if my company, first of all, it's, you know, there's not a lot of female label owners, let alone female producers in Canada.
No.
I happen to be the youngest.
In the States, really, either.
Yeah, States too. I happen to be the youngest one that I personally know. in Canada.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, wouldn't it be funny if it was like a 30-year-old woman is like running a record label, you know, and calling it MILF Records? Like, how cool is that? And then I was also going to call it, this was just dumb. I was like, I was going to call it Gelt Records, which in Yiddish, it translates to money. And it just sounds like, it just sounds like, you know, Cash Money Records, right? Like Gelt Records. Yeah. Cool. And then my lawyer was on the phone with me and he's like registering my business. And he's like, okay, so what do you want to call it? He said it just so casually. And I was like, Colossal with a K. And he was like, great. It's called Colossal with a K. And that was it.
I mean, it's a great name. It's a big name. It's,
thank you.
It's memorable. And, you just got back from, I mean, goodness, you're in Toronto for forever. You produce all the time. I mean, you're doing stuff all the time.
Thank God. Honestly, thank God.
Right?
People trust me with their records and I'm still having imposter syndrome every day.
It's so one thing that I had heard, and I really do struggle still with compliments. And I think people do, a lot of people do, I don't want to say everybody, but one of the things that Matthew McConaughey was in an interview, and this woman that was his friend in high school, an 18-year-old senior, he walks up and she says, "Well, Matthew, you look really handsome." He had on a suit this particular day, and he said he was kicking around in the grass, and she grabbed his arm very gently and said, "Just say thank you." And he said that that stuck with him for forever, and they're still very close friends today because of the impact that moment had on him. And so I was listening to, I guess it was his book Greenlight, when I was on Audible, and I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. So
yeah,
accept the compliment. You don't have to feel like an imposter, because
thank you.
Whenever we, you know, I've told you this story, but for people who are listening, I remember it had just started to go for me with TikTok, because I was signed and dropped and signed and dropped, and talking about to a degree a similar trajectory with you. I was shelved. I mean, they released and pulled and released a project that we did three times, and you know, the DSP, people are looking for something that's not out there. And then it loses all momentum, right? So I went home with my tail between my legs, and I started in this world of funeral service, and I became obsessive about being incredible at it, because that's just the type of person I am. But I never stopped creating. And I'd worked with people who didn't have that same either work ethic or maybe their eye focused on the prize. It was, they were just in 50,000 other places. They ultimately got to it. But nonetheless, I continued to create. And I remember whenever it hit for me, and I had like, I think it was 241,000 followers. And that is whenever I found, you know, because on TikTok, you're scrolling through your For You page. And I saw a video that you did, and it was, I think it was ABBA.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what's the, yep, the
probably
first one. So you take songs that are popular and you say, what if we, and you just turn it into something totally different. And I saw that, and you are one of two people that I've ever done this. I felt this immediate, like, we're going to be friends. And I clicked to message you, and I was like, let's connect. And I do have to jokingly say, I mean, you know, you're married to a woman. I'm not your type, kind of thing. So anybody's like, oh, you're just trying to. No, it was like I genuinely felt this connection to you. And I'm like, we're going to be buddies.
Hell yeah.
And I remember the first time that we talked, and we were, I guess it was a Zoom. And I was like, you and I are going to be friends.
Yeah.
And I think we had tried to connect and go to, I was going to fly there, and it didn't work out a few times. And finally, when I got there, I mean, it was just, I mean, for me, I mean, you may be like another and be like, oh, these guys are... no, but it was, and so like, you know, whenever the virality happened for me, everybody found this music that I'd done previously, and we're working on new stuff and everything that I told the story of being in 30,000 different places. It's just, I feel that you have a similar work ethic. Well, I have a similar work ethic to you, and it's, you're not going to start something and not finish it. You're not mm-hmm. going to say you'll get to it and not. It's let's get the job done.
Yes.
And you get, it's very cheesy sounding, but you get me, because you're building the show, and I said, I trust you to do the set list, mm-hmm. like to take it and on this journey. And not many people in my life from a musical standpoint like vibe that way, mm-hmm. really. So that's something I take.
I'm honored you trusted me with that, by the way.
Well, it's I've been rehearsing every day.
Say.
And it's fun, but it's really, it's amazing how you write the songs. You're very much a part of the creation of it. And yet when you go to sing it for the first time, right, and not just in sections or comping mm-hmm. or whatever, it's almost like you have this reintroduction to it,
mm-hmm.
and you have, it's like your newborn baby, and you're like, okay, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, it's been really fun to rehearse it, and every day gets better, and actually pushing through the annoyance and the frustration, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing with my voice here. Should this be my head voice, my chest voice, my, you know, but it's really, really cool. Do you have other writer or artist where you feel that creative spark with often, where it's not a forced thing whatsoever?
Yes.
Or is it kind of a diamond in the rough, though?
It is definitely like a diamond in the rough, because I'm always looking for people who are better. This is going to sound nuts, better than me. And, you know, I feel like I've gotten to a songwriting level right now, thank God. And I'm going to be cocky about it. I've been writing songs now professionally for close to 8 years. And I feel like I've really honed that skill. So when I get in the room with somebody who I can learn from is like a real treat for me. And I have a select few that, you know, I get excited when I have a session with them, because I'm like, ooh, I could really learn from you. You could really add to the session, versus a lot of the time, I do feel that like I end up like having to write a lot of like the full song for a lot of artists, because they've got maybe the voice and, you know, the look, but the songwriting is not quite there, you know? So mm-hmm. those sessions are great because they could sing the shit out of the song and sell the song. But like my favorite sessions are the ones where I'm learning from the person I'm with.
Yeah, that's having your skill set and being able to sit with all those different artists that bring a lot to the table
mm-hmm.
with Full Circle, like with everything, versus the ones that can just sing a song. And that's a talent in and of itself, but it's awesome to be able to collaborate on this idea of where this is going, this song idea. What is, who is rather your first artist or band that Colossal signed?
So we started actually with a TikTok artist, with a
is
TikTok
it,
person.
Is it the, what, the, what, sorry, what's your name?
Meg?
Her name? I was trying to think, of the song.
Meg's, yeah.
Yeah. That song is amazing.
Thank you. So that was that was a singles deal, actually. So we didn't sign a full EP deal. We did a singles deal with some options. So she exercised her singles deal. The song went really well because, you know, it was kind of testing the waters thing at first. And this is really rare, because normally when a TikTok person comes to you and their thing is like comedy and they're like, I want to be a singer, you're like, we'll try and convert your audience, you know?
What about a mortician? It's like, hey, I want to fly to Canada and let's do some stuff together.
Well, you actually have music out. She didn't have any music out, right? So it was a gamble. And then I had met her and I was like, wow, I just love everything you have to say. I love who you are. I love your voice too. And I think there's a market for this. So the way I saw it in my head was like, let's use your culture, you know, like let's dip into the thing you know best, which is your home, your culture, and you could teach me about it and we can learn together and let's make it just a banger, you know? Like, so we did this Bollywood banger called Daisy Chal, and it went out and it was on like every hip hop playlist, you know, and So for me, like, so to good. Start Colossal by taking an artist who has zero following on Spotify and just launch it. So like, and we're in like, you know, the tens of thousands of hits on the song right now, which is incredible because it's not been out for that long. So it's a wild, wild journey. And, you know, we tested the waters with that. And then we just signed this 21-year-old guy from Vancouver. Stay tuned for him. He's really, really cool. He's coming in.
Oh, so that's not even officially announced.
Oh, it's announced. It's definitely announced, but we're in development. What we're doing is we are bringing back artist development, which is something
I was going to ask. Yeah. So you all are focusing on artist development.
Absolutely.
That's good.
Like from the ground
that's
up.
That's so good.
We're not here to take credit for a job that you've done. And I'm not trying to throw major labels into you know, like under the bus. I'm just saying that the model has changed. The record business has changed in the sense of A&Rs used to be developing artists. A&Rs used to teach people how to teach artists who had talent how to write songs that are proper and see through demos and see the potential of the project, right? And to get it and to shape it. A lot of A&Rs now, like the business model has changed, right? Everybody's like, okay, well, have a viral moment and then we could talk about this. Have a viral moment. Like, okay, well, what about where's the marketing team? You are your own marketing team. So, you know, we're helping artists develop audiences together. We're sitting there talking about, okay, how do we get better at TikTok? We're bringing in outside experts. We're really going from the ground up with artists. And we're doing kind of like a one at a time thing. So like no artist gets shelved. Like artists have my cell phone number. I'm the producer on the project, which means I can't sleep if you can't sleep. I don't clock out at 5. This is my song too, you know? So that's kind of what I want to see for the music industry.
That is really special because, you know, I am in that midst of, and I'm not singling anyone out, but, you know, I have had viral moments and you go to the labels and we had, you know, we talked about being in LA and having all those meetings and everyone's like, oh, this is awesome. It's literally a plug and play at this point because you have so many followers and so much engagement and labels don't have people researching and learning from the ground up with TikTok or learning and keeping up with the change of these platforms. They don't. They just expect artists and musicians to create those viral moments constantly, and they rely on those, and there's not much development in regards to music. So what you are obviously doing is you're answering the why. And I'm obsessive about answering why. Why do you do it? Well, I believe that the artist, that I can't answer your why, but it's apparent because I'm over here like, ooh, I want to be a Colossal artist, Kayla. I want to be signed to Colossal. I'll move to Canada. We'll live next door to each other. You know, it's really special, and I love that. I love those stories. What is like when the curtain closes on life and you're, you know. What is something that you want to be remembered for? What's something, you know, I know you have your family and I think that's beautiful. I think family first. I'll tell you right now, it's not accolades. It's not the number of suits and trophies that you have surrounding your bedside. You know, at the end of days, it's the loved ones and the hands that you hold. Those are the people that matter most and that are going to be around you. So that is absolutely paramount. Family is above all. But what is something that, because I do know that we leave marks on life and we're remembered for something. What is something that, if you can control it, that people, you know, remember about you? Because obviously you don't give a shit what people think of you. So that's amazing. But what's something that you want to make sure that they know?
I think what would make me the most proud is hearing that I've helped people. I've helped people and I've made them laugh. Those are the two things, you know? That's it, because life is just, it's funny. We're all like, you know, you're in the funeral biz. We all die. So like, why are we holding grudges? why are we, you know, we're going to say stupid shit to each other. Like, we have two options. We forgive and forget and we move on and we continue to build relationships with people, or we hold grudges till we die and nothing happened. And the next generation of people, like how much meaning do you want in your life is the question. And like, I try and ask myself that every single morning is like, and that's when I pray to God is like, I'm grateful to be alive. And like, how can I add value? And that's it. And like, that's all I want to know is like, wow, she helped me. Like, that's the highest form of compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
What about you?
That's awesome. It's really weird. Thank you for asking. Cause I'm in this season. When you just asked me that, like my throat got tight, almost like, so I feel like I was gonna start crying. Cause I feel, I'm so in tune with, I do know that life is fleeting. Mm-hmm. And I love people, and I want so badly for people to know that they matter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to be remembered for, as somebody that gives a genuine shit about, I guess, just very ball it all together, mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you have much, whether you have little, whether you are an Orthodox Jew or a modern, or that you matter. Mm-hmm. And kindness. And that's what I want. That's what I want. Fair. I think fairness, being fair, is something that's important to me too. But yeah, that's what I want more than anything. And we're talking about what I'm being remembered for, but I'm in the season where I'm really excited about like holding on to contentment, moments of contentment, and finding more happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And the little, you know, the mundane stuff, you know? So, that's where I am. And your family have blessed my life, not just musically, not just creatively, but as a human being, you know, developing, this friendship and, you know, shooting shit, talking here, but in life, you've blessed it. So I'm grateful for you. And
likewise,
I think it's amazing. This is the power of technology, mm-hmm. power of creativity, power of everyone is, it's amazing. Like that we're two worlds apart and yet we're so connected and close, and it's really, really cool and a beautiful thing. And I'm grateful for our friendship, and I'm really excited for everything that you're doing. And like, you are an incredible example of doing, finding what you love and being nerdy about it, and then also not giving a shit, and just, you know, the train choo-choo analogy is awesome. So I admire you and I look up to you, and I'm grateful I'm grateful that we are able to share life together in this way. So I guess without further ado, ladies and gents, thanks for watching and listening to You'll Die Trying. This is my dear friend, Kayla Diamond. You can check her out on a bunch of stuff coming out of mine. And where else can people stream your music? What's the song that you want them to stream right in a second?
Right now, you could stream Hold Me by the Strumbellas. That's out.
Yes,
go,
and
that
was a huge.
That.
There was a huge like billboard, right? I saw the picture.
Yeah,
that's
one of my examples of like, holy shit! I get to write with my favorite band, and they're gonna put it out as their first single. Holy shit!
I mean, it's amazing. That's so cool. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
check
you,
out.
Nathan.
Yes, you're very welcome. Check out Kayla's production, artistry, her writing ability. You can listen to my upcoming songs and check out that song as well. Be sure to follow for more music and funerals. As always, I'm Nathan. That's Kayla. And this is You'll Die Trying.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here tonight, today, whatever time of the day or night it is that you're catching this. Be sure to subscribe and check out Bonus Noise, subscribers only. It's all in the show notes. And thanks for all that you bring to this life. As I said at the beginning, you matter, you're worth it, and love far more than you could ever know. I will see you at 189. Take care, guys.